From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Welcome to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler. I'm a licensed psychotherapist. And every week we deal with mental health issues from a holistic perspective, which means a balance in body, mind, and spirit, so that we are feeling a sense of confidence and trust in how we're functioning in the world. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? And I'm still hearing music, Rob. Thank you. So hopefully you all heard that introduction. And so, like I said, we all know that the truth will set you free. The question we ask here is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? Now, freedom comes in a lot of different forms. There is obviously political freedom, and there is physical freedom, emotional freedom, spiritual freedom, and we achieve those freedoms in many different ways. Some of us, I know as a therapist, I have clients that come to me all the time and are not feeling successful, which is the topic of my show today, success. How do you define it? And in defining it, it may be milestones, like today's show is dedicated to my nephew, Max, who's graduating high school this month and will be coming to Phoenix next year to Arizona State. And that's a success. A graduation is a success to many people. Many people will achieve it and not feel it's a success. So I know myself over the years, people have told me what a success I am. Succeeding, but not feeling like a success, are important things to take a look at. In other words, many of us have the trappings. We have the house. We have the income. We have, maybe the relationship. We look good. We feel good. But we don't feel like a success. I know that's very common with people with ADD because we never feel like we're doing it good enough. We never feel like we are achieving even when we are achieving. And, you know, you've heard me talk about my own ADD, and I realized a while ago that my sense, my personal sense of success, even though people are always acknowledging me for the things I'm accomplishing and what I'm doing, was always, yes, but I could do better. Now, all of us can do better. The important thing is being able to embrace the fact and acknowledge oneself for the fact that you are achieving and you are accomplishing. And yes, there's more to achieve and more to accomplish as long as we're alive. Now, success for some people is a very simple thing. For other people, it has visions of major achievements in the world. But success is success. And I'm not defining success as you're only a success if you're a Donald Trump. He defines success the way he lives his life. Real estate, investments, lots of money, lots of power, television shows, all that sort of stuff. And if we talk to Donald Trump, I don't know. Maybe he would see himself as a success. Maybe he wouldn't. Okay? But that's not the definition of success for everybody. For some people, the definition of success is getting up in the morning when they're depressed. For some people, the definition of success is passing a test when you've struggled so much in school with a particular subject, or at least passing it. For some people, if they don't get an A, they're not a success. For some people, getting that 65 when 65 is passing is a huge success when you've struggled with that all along. But how many people, and maybe you yourselves can relate to getting that 65, even though you've struggled at it, and still feeling bad about the grade. And so it really is important to really take time to define what you mean by success. Now, this is a live call-in show, and if you're in the Phoenix area, the number is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. If you're listening over the Internet, as I know I do have listeners in other cities around the country, it's the same number. It's a toll call, but with most of our calling plans today, that's not expensive. It's the same number, 480 area code, 949-1310. Now, before I introduce my guest, I want to read something by Emerson. And this was something that was brought to my attention years ago by a friend of mine who had passed away. And this was the creed he lived by. And he did that very well. His name was Dennis Bittner. And Emerson wrote, "To laugh often and much, to win the respect of intelligent people and the affection of children, to earn the appreciation of honest critics and endure the betrayal of false friends, to appreciate beauty, to find the best in others, to leave the world a little better, whether by a healthy child, a garden patch, or a redeemed social condition. To know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived, that is to have succeeded." From the first time I heard that, and many of you may have heard it before because it's, you know, read and posted in a lot of different places, it's a very powerful way to look at it, and to me it simplifies things, and it puts everything within reach if you're going to define success the way Emerson did and does. Now, speaking of success, I want to introduce my guest to you today. His name is Lenwood Patterson, and he's a 41-year-old African-American gay male who has been successful at thriving for 17 years with HIV and AIDS. He has 15 years of recovery from drugs and alcohol. He's a survivor of incest and sexual abuse and a very difficult childhood and a very difficult section of Baltimore growing up. And today, in addition to thriving with HIV for 17 years and his 15 years of recovery, tomorrow he, at age 41, is going to be receiving his Bachelor of Science degree in psychology from California State University in Los Angeles. And he's the first in his immediate family to receive a college degree. He's been working for a long time in substance abuse counseling. He's well-respected. I respect him tremendously, which is why I asked him to talk about his definition of success on the show today and what he's encountered with so many people that he's reached out to and helped in his 12-step program and at his job and in his personal life. So, Lenwood, I really want to thank you for taking the time the day before your graduation to be on the show.
You're welcome.
Talk a little bit about how you define success and whether you really feel like you're successful at this point in your life.
Well, my first success, of course, is my recovery. I just celebrated 15 years of recovery from crack cocaine and alcohol, and I realized that the graduation couldn't be happening tomorrow without that being the premise of it all. It's interesting that you would say, do I feel successful? Because, you know, there's a big part of me that still does not feel like it's enough.
You know, uh-huh.
Being the first person in my family getting a bachelor's, I have a lot of people who encourage me to be in this graduation because all I wanted was the paper and, you know, and move on to the next task, you know, and most of the people in my support group, my AA support group, was like, well, this is a big deal. They had to kind of encourage me to go to this graduation. And I think that's a large part of the disease of addiction, you know, never feeling good enough, never feeling deserving. I recall even when I turned 10 years sober, you had reminded me that some people couldn't get 10 days in here. year. I had 10 years, and
uh-huh.
I didn't want to have a party. And he was like, well, you need to celebrate it. And you know, I think sometimes the big part of being sober is humility. And
it's humility?
Humility, yes. And I feel that sometimes if you celebrate, ego has a big chance of coming in. And I've seen a lot of people who take their so-called successes and make that their reason for living and lose out on their recovery. And I really have to be conscious of, although this is a success, the first success is recovering from drugs and alcohol.
And that was not particularly an easy road for you.
No. I mean,
how many people in recovery are constantly relapsing and focusing more on the relapse than they are on the time that they actually have sober?
Well, they statistically say 1 out of 10 make it, whatever, however they measure that.
Because
it's an anonymous program, first of all. So, I mean, it may be, doing the work for the last 12 years, 13 years of my life in the drug and alcohol field, the revolving door is constant. You know, I mean, right now I have a roommate who just told me the other day he hates AA people. And, you know, because basically I had explained to him that I would have to move because we both agreed that he would stop drinking. And, you know, and he's a doctor. I mean, talking about success. You know, he's a medical doctor? He's a cancer research doctor. And you would think that's successful, but yet he can't stop drinking. He drinks
right.
day in and drinks day out. And before probably living here, I would still saw him as a success, you know, and we had a conversation in one of his drunken stupors, I guess I could say. And he was making a statement. I was in denial of my HIV status. And he was saying that he wasn't, and that's why he drinks so much. And I was saying, well, if I had to be in denial in my life as opposed to watching what you do every day, I'd really rather be here.
Well, this is an important thing, because what he's saying is, other than the fact that he's an alcoholic, he's saying the reason he's drinking is because he's HIV positive, and that's a heavy weight for him to carry, and he can't deal with it, so he's justifying his drinking because of the emotional strain he's under with the HIV. You took a different approach, which was, I'm HIV positive, and, you know, I can give in to that, or I can choose to live every day in a way that is empowering and that's achieving things, and not let the HIV define who I am as a person and how my life is supposed to be.
True.
Okay?
Absolutely.
So really, then, it's about success then becomes a choice we make about what we choose to focus on and how we choose to let it affect us.
Yeah. I mean, I can relate to him because when I did find out almost 17, 18 years ago, because I did drink and I drug because I didn't think I would be here, but then I realized, and he's been diagnosed just as long as I have.
And instead of looking at the fact that he's still here after 17 years, he's still using his excuse.
Yeah, well, just the insidiousness of the disease. So, again, you know, success, you know, it's subjective, I would say. You know,
right.
You know, sometimes in my pitch in AA meetings, I say, if I can wake up today and go to sleep sober, that day has been a success no matter what I've done in between that.
Good.
You know what I mean? And I got to keep it sometimes that simple. You know.
Well, I agree with you, because a lot of people, like I said at my introduction, a lot of people say if you're not being Donald Trump, you're not a success.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you're not doing better than your dad or mom did, you're not a success. But to me, success starts with setting realistic goals. You know, so that the goals that you're setting are achievable. Even if you have a major goal that says, I do want to earn $1 million, it's important to question yourself why that $1 million is important. Is it what you're going to do with it, or is it just, like you said, your ego saying, that's what I need to define myself?
Well, it took a while for me to, of course, get that, because coming from the family I talked about earlier, you know, my mother had this thing about, you know, you have to make money, and some of the things she did to make money, which was...
Say it a little louder. I don't know if it's in the studio today or whether it's your phone, but I can't hear you that clearly.
Okay, I was saying that it took me a while to get that success was, I guess, from the inside as opposed to the outside, being taught early in my life that it was about money. And just money was a big thing coming from the community that I came from, to the point that you had a lot of people in the community, you know, this might be controversial here, but, you know, little scheme, get-rich-quick schemes, welfare fraud. You know, I watched all these people do these things, and it just didn't set right with me. You know, I was like, I probably can do just as well going to school and getting a job as I watched a lot of people trying to figure out the next game. You know, and I just didn't look like they really were happy. You know, because basically, you know, I always say that the things you work for are the things that you keep. The things that you get quickly are the things that you're willing to let go of quickly, you know, quicker. You know, my degree, you know, that has been work. You know, and you talk about being depressed, you know, because I'm not always feeling good enough, because I worked full-time, and I got the AA degree about 2 years ago. I didn't see a bachelor's degree anywhere. You know, I was like, well, let's just do the AA, and we'll see where we go from there.
Uh-huh.
And it took me about 10 years to get that AA degree, because in the midst of that, I had a partner of 5 years die. I relocated from Los Angeles back to Baltimore, then back to Los Angeles. So a lot of things happened in those years that obtaining the Associate of Arts degree, it was difficult to attain. And then when I finally, I guess, got back on kilter, because, you know, again, watching a lot of people put something before their recovery. And also in those years, I started taking HIV meds, which the initial taking of those medications can make you sick, very sick. You know, I've never been sick the whole 17 years I've been diagnosed. But taking those medications, you kind of get fatigued. And I remember going to school one time and working and making it to the front of the school doorstep and saying, what am I doing? You know, I was nauseated. I was fatigued. And I was just struggling. I was like, maybe school would have to be on hold for this quarter, you know, and just work and try to get adjusted to this medication. And, you know, I did that. And, again, I managed to maintain my recovery because, again, that's the most important. Before the degree, my job, I love working with drug addicts and alcoholics. I don't know if that makes me crazy. But, you know, I love what I do for a living. But I always say if I don't have me, then I'm not living my life. I'm living someone else's. And I'm not making an impact on people if I don't have who I am.
Right.
And that's, I think, has been the motivation under getting this degree, that I had to keep first thing first, was like,
you prioritize things, and even when your ego was in the way and trying to talk you out of moving forward, you somehow got through that. Now, I want to get back to Baltimore for a minute, okay? Because I know in your bio, you have a lot of things that for a lot of people would use them as excuses to work against them.
Right.
Okay, you live in a country where being African American holds its own set of challenges and difficulties. You live in a country where being gay holds its own set of challenges and difficulties. You live in a country where being HIV positive holds its own set of challenges and difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
You live in a world where, you know, being an addict has another set of challenges and difficulties. You're a survivor of incest and sexual abuse. Your dad was not particularly around through growing up, so you didn't really have some male guidance growing up. And both of your parents were alcoholics, okay? So when you list all those things, I mean, most people would listen to, would look at that and say, why bother? I mean, it's like, and a lot of people do. A lot of people say, look, I got too much stacked against me. I have every reason and every excuse I want to have to just give up or go to a life of crime or to just stay stoned all the time. You know, I mean, it puts things in perspective, even for myself when I'm whining about something that I think is unfair or difficult. You know, you had a lot working against you. What was it like growing up like that in Baltimore? I mean, you mentioned something about, you know, the attitude and atmosphere that you saw around you, and yet you were able to tap into a wisdom inside you and a higher power inside you, even as a kid, to say, I could do just as well getting a job and earning money, and they don't look happy. I mean, somehow you had that intuitive sense, even as a child, to make decisions that didn't get you sucked into gangs and a lot of other things that it could have. What was that like? How did you do that?
You know, it was a lot unconscious. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I, although I said that I could see around me that these people wasn't happy, and I don't know if it's, going to school, I learned the role of the hero, and I guess I was the oldest child. And, you know, I kind of could sense the emotional atmosphere. You know, it was like between my mother and father beating up on each other. I mean, I watched them stab and shoot each other. And, you know, I mean, going to school, I got beat up every day. Almost, it was like, if I didn't get beat up in school, I got beat up at home. You know, so it was just like, and at the age of 16, I did try to commit suicide. You know, it was like if life was going to continue to be this horrific, I just didn't want to be here anymore. And, you know, evidently that didn't succeed. It was just, you know, I've been doing therapy, you know, and you were one of my therapists. And one of the last therapists I went to, which was a couples counseling therapist, and I'll tell you more about that one day. But she had said immediately when she met me was that there's some way, there's some angels watching over me, you know, which I guess that's the only way I got out, you know, because if I was conscious, you know, because I ended up in California as a way to die. You know, when I was diagnosed with HIV, it was like, and me and my mother, we had our own issues. And, you know, she was 16 years old when she had me. So it was like a child raising children. And she didn't know how to instill esteem in her child. And everything I did was wrong. It was never, you know, it was like, you know, you don't have a friend in this world but me and God, as she would say. Yet my head was saying, well, if you're beating me with extension cords, then God is allowing you that to happen. Well, you know,
who needs enemies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, I wasn't really conscious of to that degree, but I guess at some level I was, because when I got the chance to get out, I got out. You know, I moved 3,000 miles, drove my car 3,000 miles across the country, not knowing what was here in California. Didn't have a plan to get clean and sober. You know, it was really to die. And I always say that there was a part of me that did die. You know,
what do you mean?
Meaning that part that was given up. You know, because there was, I mean, saying I want to die that clear, I was ready to give up. You know, and more of a psychological death or a somewhat spiritual death, if you may. I put that to rest when I got here, and that was reborn again when I got into recovery, you know, working the 12 steps. And, you know, something in me was like, I mean, I didn't know that I would sit here today with 15 plus years of recovery. I didn't know I would be sitting here, you know, going to a graduation tomorrow. All I did know that I was in a lot of psychological, emotional, and spiritual pain. And if Alcoholics Anonymous was going to work, I was going to give it a chance, because I tried everything else and it didn't work. You know, from church to moving across the country to changing relationships, physical environments, reading books, you know, everything.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I guess I don't even know how Alcoholics Anonymous worked, because I had been in a car accident years before and went to a meeting and it was like, these people have nothing to tell me, you know. And
well, you weren't ready, you know.
I wasn't ready. Yeah, basically, I really wasn't ready. And,
right.
You know, and I don't know what takes you know, takes one to be ready besides this spiritual awakening. That's the only thing I can call it.
Mm-hmm. Well, to me, that spiritual awakening is like what you said, you know, that, you know, the other therapist had said you have angels watching over you, and something, you know, I've always known about you from the first time I met you was that, you know, you are what I call an earth angel. You're on this planet for a reason, and there was something about you that intuitively knew not to give up because you had something to do. You had a healing to do for yourself, but success also is measured by how you're living your life and the people you touch. You know, like in what I read about Emerson, to know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived. And, you know, I know you and I know the people you've touched, and I know many lives have breathed easier because you have lived. And
that's so hard to take in sometimes, Stuart.
Well, take a breath and take it in.
Okay.
Because to be part of being a success is acknowledging your success and letting others see it, and not in an egotistical way, but in a humble way of saying, you know, I like who I am. I'm living in integrity. To me, that's the essence of being a success, that you're, the way you're living your life, you feel good about. And however that is, doesn't matter to me if you're bussing tables in a restaurant or owning the restaurant. If you like the way you're living your life, the way you treat people, the way you treat yourself, the examples you're living by and things like that, you're a success. And that's what I see in you. And that's why, you know, a few years ago when you were, dealing with your 10th year of recovery, I really encouraged you to have that party. Let others see the celebration in this. You know, don't hide. Acknowledge it. How did that affect you when you had that party? When you surrounded yourself with all of these people with somewhat more sobriety and others with not as much sobriety, how did it feel to you throwing that party?
Well, it really shocked my soul in a way. You know,
it what?
It shocked my soul. It
shocked,
you know,
your soul.
It was like, wow. I mean, I just had a 15-year birthday party at the Catch One,
mm-hmm.
which is a big club here, and the owner, she's in recovery, and you know, and I was seeing, because I have my race issues too, and I was dating this white person, and he often hears me say, I don't think I'm making a big enough impact in the black community, because most of my life is very multicultural, but it's not as, I guess, African American or black as I would like it to be. And that's, again, probably, you know, using a measuring stick like I use in most parts of my life, that I'm not doing enough. And the person I was dating kind of made the observation that if you looked at everybody that was at your party, they were mostly black.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, you know, and I just didn't, you know, I mean, I was so, you know, overwhelmed by the turnout. And, you know, it's just constantly, I guess, questioning, am I doing enough? And, again, that could be a positive aspect, but more times for me, and I don't know if it was negative, but I think me always questioning kept me alive and thriving.
Uh-huh.
You know, is this enough? You know, and if it's not enough, you know, how do I make it enough? And I'll do something physically initially, but then I'll get to a place where, you know what, particularly when my body says, you know, lay down, you know, or, you know, like today, you know, it's like this week I had finals just before the graduation, and I had some drama come off it at the job, you know, and it was like, and I got through this week, and besides this, you know, having this conversation with you, I just made a decision that today I'm just going to rest.
Good.
You know, it's like, you know, I've been through 3 years, summer school, everything to get this degree, you know, showing up for everyone, you know, and I just have to be okay with being still,
uh-huh.
You know, for a moment, you know, because tomorrow is like 30 people's coming to the graduate, and I bought some tickets for a lot of newcomers in a fellowship because I want them to see also that you can do this, you can get a degree. So I have a lot of people showing up. It's the first gay graduation they're having at Cal State Los Angeles, and That's exciting. You know, it's, I always find myself on the beginning of things. I don't know what that's about.
Well, you are a groundbreaker, though. And I mean, even the fact that you went out and bought those tickets for newcomers to help give them a sense of what it can be. You know, many of them are going to be going there, well, he did that, but I'm never going to be able to do that.
Mm.
And to me, you know, part of success is dealing with the doubts that we have in ourselves, you know, and constantly reassessing them. And that's something I know you did, you know, as long as I've known you, you've reassessed where, what direction you're heading in, and you were honest, you know, telling the truth faster about the doubts that you had and the voices in your head that were saying, you can't do this, you shouldn't do this, who are you, who do you think you are, you know, mm-hmm. to stand up and be a role model. And to me, without acknowledging the doubts that are there and questioning them and finding out the sources of where those, in other words, whose voice are you really hearing in your head? Is it mom? Is it dad's? Is it, you know, your religions or whatever? Without really stopping and acknowledging those doubts and cleaning them up, you're giving power to the doubts, mm-hmm. which is what they want you to do.
Yeah, I mean, I was constantly told growing up, you know, I mean, you know, and we talked a little bit earlier about giving my mother, you know, her props and acknowledging her success, you know, before, you know, I wanted her to read the bio I had sent to you. You know, I had talked about her, you know, she would come home drunk and try to look at my penis and, you know, we used to play tug of war with the blanket and some of the stuff I've talked about in recovery, I'm not sure, or in therapy, I wasn't quite sure if she was ready to hear or read that bio. And, you know, I had called her and said, well, before, because I just last month she had sent a church member out here to meet me. And, you know, and I think a big part of my recovery is about being true to me. You know, I think that's just one of the premises of recovery. You got to be true to yourself. So, you know, I met the, you know, the friend of hers and we was talking and he was from Baltimore. And I told him, you know, I'm gay and I had my experience. Just, you know, in conversation and her first immediate response was, how could you tell a church member of mine that you were gay? And, you know, and I'm like, well, why did you even, you know, I didn't even know he was coming. And he calls me out the clear, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I'm like, okay, I'll make time, you know, my mother. And so I wanted to, I don't want to do any harm to her, you know, because, you know, the first thing I called her and told her about the bio, she said, I know you love me today. And I said, okay, I just want you to get that clear, no matter, you know, and she said to me, you know, the only person you have to be true to is God and yourself. And it was like, okay, that's another lesson that we're continuing to teach each other.
Well, that's,
you know,
clearly a success for your mom, too.
Right.
To be able to have forgiven herself and not buy into the shame that she's lived with in her own recovery, to have gotten the fact that, you know, what was is, you know,
mm-hmm.
instead
mm-hmm.
of living in the shame and the guilt that we all could choose to hold on to from our childhood, you know, from our children's childhoods and things like that, you know, that's a major accomplishment for your mom to be able to separate what was from who she is today
and
who you
really,
are today and
this,
to honor that.
This was really mind-blowing. She said, I did not know what I was having when I had you. You know,
say that again a little louder.
She said she did not know what or who she was having when she had me. She said,
yeah,
you
you've
are.
Been a surprise to her, huh?
I mean, she's so proud of me today.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's just the challenges we both struggle. I mean, because that three-year moment I lived back in Baltimore, I thought in my big, I mean, the same person that think he can't do enough wants to save a whole community. And that was my thought of going back to Baltimore. I was going to show the black gay community how you could thrive. And it really didn't go that way. And what did happen was me and my mother got closer for
uh-huh.
3 years. She got to see her child clean and sober and to become a man.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Let's talk about your work. I know that as a substance abuse counselor, you work at a recovery program called Alternatives.
Correct.
As a primary substance abuse counselor.
Mm-hmm.
When you first started working there, did you already have the certification?
No, it really, again, I guess the angels lost for a better way. I was sponsoring someone, I was about 2 years sober, and I was sponsoring someone, and I was just starting going to school. And even how I became a counselor was not something I planned to be. I was walking across LACC's campus, there was a flyer on the ground that had said, if you had problems with drugs and alcohol and you want to help others, why not use your experience to help others? And I was like, well, okay, I guess I'll try it. and I started with, like, it was like 15 psychology classes, and I was getting A's, which was flooring me because, again, I thought I was stupid. You know, I never was acknowledged for being smart. And I kept a 4.0 for the longest. And it was like these tapes, it was hard to live with these old tapes playing, but this new experience happening. You know, and if I had a lot of angels, like yourself, Stuart, you know, saying to me, again, and even coming from Baltimore and D.C., being a majority black or African-American city, then coming out here, and it was non-black people that were encouraging me and lifting me up. And everything that I was taught was being erased right before my eyes. And then I think I was taking the person home to the recovery center that I now work in. I was taking him there, and one of the directors ran out to my car and asked me, we got a position open. We know you in school getting your certification. Would you like to work here? And I'm like, okay. I mean, I don't know, yeah. And that company has been so good to me for the last, you know, I mean, because I left in 3 years in between working there in the last nine, and I called them back and told them that I was coming back and would they have a position open for me. And they were like, of course, just get back here. And one of the owners, because the owners are two gay guys, that's partners, and one of the owners just passed away 2 years ago, and it's been difficult at the company as a whole, but you know, we still thrive. We're just opening up a new program in Palm Springs, but I would never seen two gay guys create what these two guys have, and to love and support me the way that they have. I mean, me and the one that's still Michael, who's still the one that's living still. We have conversations, and he said, me and Frank, and that was the other, his partner's name, we always wanted to watch out for you. We wanted to take care of you. And, you know, and it was hard for me to get, how could these two white men care anything about this black little boy, you know? And they cared, you know, and you know, I mean, although Frank is in heaven now, and I still feel like his love and spirit is still falling down on me through Michael. And it's just been a... You know, I mean, recently my mother said, you know, I was telling about the radio show I was going to do today, and she said, if you were to die, and I could say that there's nothing that you haven't done.
Wow.
I mean, it's like, you know, I just say yes. Like when you ask me, you know, I can say my head said no, don't do it. You know, you're going to mess it up. And my lips said yes.
Actually, I was fully expecting to have to talk you into it, to be honest with you. and I was a little taken aback when you so quickly said yes, and I felt really proud of you at that point, because I really felt like you were grounded in who you were, and you knew you had something to say, and you were trusting what I was offering.
Absolutely.
And that was great.
I'll never forget the day that we were together, and you looked in my eyes and told me.
I can't hear you say it again.
I'll never forget the day we was in therapy together, and you just looked in my eyes and told me that you cared, and I believed you, you know, and you said to me, it's not about any of the sexual stuff that, you know, I make everybody out to be, and that stuck with me to this day. It's like, you know, whoever you saw in me was enough, and I had to believe that what you saw, other people saw too.
And did you start seeing it finally?
I see it off and on. I mean, it's still a challenge, but
Well, in all honesty, even my own stuff, I see off and on.
Yeah.
You know, when people expect me to always have this empowered sense of who I am, I mean, I still live in my doubts, too, and I still, you know, struggle with things. I just think that's part of the process. And like I said, the more honest you can be about it, the more important, you know, the work becomes that much more durable and real, you know. So some of the things I'm hearing us talk about here, you know, in terms of success, because those that are listening out there, it's kind of, okay, you know, he's talking about the successes he had, but, you know, how can I do that, you know? And what I said at the beginning is it's important to have a set of goals.
Right.
And it's important to prioritize those goals and make and divide them up into doable smaller steps. Okay, so that it's something that you said, I want to achieve that. What do I need first to achieve before I get to that final step? Okay, and maybe those goals are so small because you feel so overwhelmed already that you don't even know. Just like you said, you had no idea that the associate's degree, the ultimate goal, was going to be a bachelor's degree. And you know, I haven't even asked you about whether you're going for a master's yet, which I have a feeling is not so unrealistic for you.
No.
So the idea is about setting goals. The second part is getting support in achieving those goals. It is so important to realize you don't have to and you can't do it on your own.
Exactly.
Am I right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And to surround yourself with people that support, it's just like you said, I needed to leave Baltimore in order to find a life, even though you didn't realize that's why you were leaving Baltimore. You said you were leaving Baltimore to die, you know, but basically sometimes we need to let go of certain people in certain places in order to find those people that will have fresh eyes and a fresh heart and fresh ears who can support the directions we feel we want to go in, right?
Right. I mean, I really want to say that even pursuing this degree, because I think my whole life was trying to find a significant other. And I remember one time being in a bed with one of my friends, and he had asked me, well, why haven't you gotten your degree? And I was being sarcastic. I said, well, I'm not going to say exactly what I said, but I said something like, pursuing relationships is why I haven't gotten my degree. You know, I mean, I was putting other things that I thought was more important, and that is, you know, I wanted other people to take care of me instead of realizing that I could do it for myself.
Right.
You know, and it was like, and some of the stuff that I was taught, I did buy into some of it, you know, and leaving home. I mean, it's like family. I mean, I watch a lot of people, you know, like they can't make it if they don't have their families, or, and not that families are a bad institution, but the thing is that I could do so much more for my family and the people that I love the more successful I become.
Say that again. That's so important.
I could do more for my family and people that I love the more successful I become.
Say it again. It's so important.
Okay. I can do more for my family and for people that I love the more successful I become.
That's really beautifully put, because a lot of people use the family stuff as an excuse. Well, I'm too busy dealing with all the drama in the family. How can I go out and do anything else? And that's why sometimes it is important to kind of leave the nest in order to achieve what you want to achieve, in order to come back and actually improve the nest.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
And very often just by setting the example and being a role model, it has a ripple effect. People get it. You know? So when we're talking about getting support as the second step after figuring out the goals, and sometimes we need support in figuring out what the goals are.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
Surround yourself with people who have positive attitudes, who believe in you, who, you know, are mentors and role models for you. And then it's about reassessing it constantly, okay? In other words, just because you've set a goal doesn't mean 6 months down the road you may get that maybe this isn't really the direction, and other new information comes in, or you've achieved certain things, and it's about reassessing those goals and maybe sometimes readjusting them.
Mm-hmm.
And then dealing with the doubts, like I said, and then empowering yourself and empowering others by acknowledging the achievements that you've made, like you having the sobriety parties and you buying tickets for, you know, newcomers to come to your graduation tomorrow.
Absolutely.
It empowers you, but it also empowers them. And it empowers you by saying, I have an achievement and I want to share it.
True.
And to me, you know, all those steps are how we can become successful. Again, however you define success. You know?
And you don't have to pull the whole structure down if you don't meet one goal. I mean, I think that's so important also. You know, I know, I mean, just this week, some of the drama that I was talking about at my job, you know, the person in recovery, they made a foolish choice, you know, and And now no one, none of his peers can contact. He's almost like fell off the face of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And we tried to acknowledge to him that, you know, choice wasn't great, but you don't have to drink and use behind it. And, of course, our fear is that he has because we can't contact him anymore. But it's like I think it's important just to know first things first. I still can achieve my goal, although one part of it may have fell out. You know, I mean, because I think a lot of us, you know, if one, I know early in my recovery, it was like if I made one mistake during the day, then I had to, you know, pull the covers over my head and not show for anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like I just had to stop everything. And it's not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as long as I know for me, and this, I don't know how someone would compare this in their own life, but as long as, again, I don't pick up and I don't drink,
mm-hmm.
there's hope. And I need to remember that. You know, no matter
right.
what I do, it's not as big of a deal as if I was to pick up a drink or drug a day.
Mm-hmm. Well, and a corollary to what you're saying, which I, you know, have in my notes here, is it's not just doing something you never did before, you know, is a success and achieving it, but just trying, even if you don't complete it, even if you're not successful in completing it or doing it right, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
that at least attempting something that's beyond your comfort level that you never did before, to me, that's the success. Reaching beyond your predefined boundaries and limits and at least attempting it, you know, whether it's, you know, playing a sport you never tried before just for the sake of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, for me, I said on the show a number of times, and I use an example. Years ago, I made a list of all these things I've always dreamed of doing but never could or never thought I could or I never tried or had too much fear to do it, you know. And like, one thing was learning how to scuba dive, and I lived in Florida at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I did all the classes. I did the 3 checkout dives. I was on the floor of the Atlantic Ocean off Palm Beach doing one of my dives, watching a shark swim by.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did for my self-esteem and my confidence just doing that. And I haven't gone scuba diving since. I just needed to feel that accomplishment, to do
right.
something that what most people would have thought was out of character for me.
Right.
That was
right.
the success, reaching beyond my limits. And it doesn't mean all of a sudden it has to be a complete part of your life. And even if you don't succeed at it, it's just knowing that you tried and then assess, well, what were the blocks? Then you're learning something. Then you're succeeding.
Stuart, getting out of my neighborhood was outside of my limit.
Say again?
Getting outside of my neighborhood was outside of my limit.
Right. Well, for a lot of people, that's true. And it's the
you
same
know.
Thing, you know.
Yeah.
You know, standing up to the family laws and standing up to the family traditions and the dysfunctional things that you know don't work for the family, that's a success, too.
Yeah.
Saying
yeah.
life could be different.
You know. Even though you don't know how.
Even though you don't know how.
Exactly.
And like you did, and like a lot of people do, leaving home is at least removing some of the initial stuff that keeps us stuck.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can at least know that you have some options and you have some possibilities of doing things differently.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I do want to ask you, you're planning on a master's degree?
I do. I'm not quite sure. When we're, I mean, I know within the next year and a half, because right
you'll be
now,
deciding.
I have some financial stuff happening, but I know that just like the bachelor's happening, just like the associate's happening, it will happen.
Uh huh. Good to you.
So,
and I believe it too.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're gonna be finishing up here in a minute. I'm going to read Thank God for American Greetings and Hallmark and all that stuff. This is the graduation card I bought for you.
Okay.
So I want to read it over the air. And on the front of it, it says, what is success? And it says, setting goals but not in concrete. Staying focused but turning aside to help someone. Following a plan but remaining flexible. Moving ahead but not too fast to smell their flowers. Taking a bow, but applauding those who had a part in your success. And inside it says, you are a success. Congratulations on your graduation.
Wow.
It's amazing what you can get off greeting cards, isn't
I mean,
it?
It's everything we just finished talking about.
Say again?
It's everything we just finished talking about.
Exactly.
I mean, it's like, wow.
And to be honest with you, when I came up with the thought of the show when I found this card.
Oh, okay.
And I knew you had to be the guest on it because, well, really, it was about you.
Well, I do appreciate you, I must say. I mean, I really thank you for taking the risk and just being part of my life.
Well, it's been my pleasure, too, and I'm totally looking forward to seeing you get that diploma tomorrow.
Yeah, me too. I deserve it, right?
Say again?
I deserve it.
Oh, you totally deserve it, and a lot more, Lenwood. So, if people want to get in touch with you, I'm just letting them know that if anybody's listening and they want to email you or get in touch with you, they could do it at my website, tellthetruthfaster.com. And anything you want to say or ask Lenwood or comments you want to make about the show, you can do email me through the website, tellthetruthfaster.com, and I will forward any of them relevant to Lenwood onto him. And with a way of responding back to you, if it's just a comment you want to make, I know he'd appreciate the support and the congratulatory remarks that he deserves so well.
Absolutely.
And this show will be archived. I know I'm about 2 months behind in the archives, and I keep saying all this, but my guy that usually does it has not been able to get to them. But soon, all the shows, the last 2 months and this show, will be archived on there for anybody to go and listen to in the future. So I also want to change gears here for a bit and acknowledge my sponsor for the show and let any of you listening know that if any of you want to buy some airtime or support the show in any way financially, you can get information on that at my website also. But my current sponsor is the Rainbow Mobile Notary Services. And Charles King owns it, and he's a roving notary. Now, in the light of recent events, we as a nation have all recently witnessed the unfortunate events and circumstances surrounding Terri Schiavo. Each day, hundreds of individuals face difficult life-altering decisions and are not properly prepared. Don't let this happen to you. Let Rainbow Mobile Notary Services help. And we all tend to avoid stressful, emotional, physical, and financially charged issues and convince ourselves it's never going to happen to me, I'm never going to be in that position, or I have plenty of time before I deal with all this stuff. But for your own peace of mind and for the well-being of those you love, don't wait or procrastinate. Let Rainbow Mobile Notary Services assist you with living wills, trusts, estate planning, medical, power of attorneys, and much more. Plan now. Prevent problems later. You can get in touch with them, and they will come to you, your home or your office or a hospital room or whatever, just by calling them, and they will make sure that all the paperwork for the medical power of attorney and any other forms you need done are handled properly, and they may even have some blank ones, which a lot of the medical durable power of attorneys are fill-in-the-blanks, basically, and they will notarize them so that they're legal and it can be done now and you don't have to wait and you don't have to put it off any longer. So you can contact Rainbow Mobile Notary Services by calling them at 480-518-2090. That's 480-518-2090. Or you can visit their website at www.rainbowprof.com. That's rainbowprof as in professional, P-R-O-F. RainbowProf.com. And I want to thank Charles King and his company, Rainbow Mobile Notary Services, for their support. And I invite all of you to support them and support yourself and your loved ones by taking care of this paperwork. So with all that being said, Lenwood, I want to thank you again for taking time on your one day of rest
to do something that I think will
continue empowering other people for a long time to come. And I know that you will be doing that because that's who you are. So thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you.
And I thank all my listeners out there. I thank the emails I get from you. And I know many of you have questions and are often shy to call in, but in the future I hope you will. And this is Stuart Altshuler with Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM in Phoenix. Thanking you for listening and thanking you for your support and wishing you all a great weekend and lots of love and congratulations to my nephew Max on his graduation. I know last night was his prom, and I'm very excited for him and very proud of him. So have a good weekend, everyone.
So